Where are we? That's the question we've been asking with Jesus for the past 3 weeks. You remember 2 weeks ago, we were with Jesus in the Judean wilderness outside of Jerusalem when we watched as, or when we heard about the temptation of Jesus. And he showed us that in that low part of the world, that when we're united with him, we too can conquer against temptation. We can conquer against or conquer in the battle of sin. And if you remember last week, we went from the low places of the world to the high places. We went to a mountain, the Mount of the Transfiguration, where with Peter, James, and John, we became witnesses of that glorious transfiguration, which points to the glory to which each of us is called. We came down from the mountain and learned also that glory only comes about through sacrifice, through putting to death those parts of our life which are not of God, and turning ourselves completely over to him, making of our lives even an oblation. That's one of the things we're doing in a certain sense today. We're preparing your sacrifice, Brittany and Alan, your own sacrifice of yourself when you become baptized. For baptism is a death and rising to new life. And so in this scrutiny, we prepare, or you prepare, for that beautiful sacrament. And each week, we renew the covenant of our own baptism and are reminded of the glory to which we're called, brothers and sisters, as we celebrate the Mass and offer from our poverty that what we have and those things which keep us from God, and God changes them. He makes them into a foretaste of our glorious destiny. Yet between now and the glory to which we're called, the glory which we glimpse in the transfiguration, between now and heaven, in other words, our state is one of longing, of desiring. What I mean is this: we have desires and they seem never to be completely fulfilled. If you think about that, nothing on earth completely fulfills us. Now, this is super obvious when it comes to children, right? Their desire for food and for drink and for toys and for comfort can be satisfied for all of about 5 seconds. And then something else is necessary, and something else is necessary. And we like to think that somehow we grow out of that. And in a certain sense, we do. We learn how to delay satisfaction or delay gratification of our desires. But it's the truth for all of us as well. We have desires, and nothing on earth completely fulfills us totally. We adults experience this all the time. And I think in a particular way, though, we experience it in moments of joy. Now, that seems counterintuitive, but it's true. Every moment of joy that you've ever had in your life is twinged with just a little bit. Even the best moment is twinged with just a little bit of sadness, because it ends. And you know it will end. You know that the next thing, that in the words of C.S. Lewis, today's Sunday, but tomorrow, it's a Monday morning. And you got to go to work, right? Or if you don't work in Monday morning, you got to go on Tuesday. You got to be about the daily things of life. And we come here each week and we get a glimpse, we get a foretaste of the very heaven to which we're called. But tomorrow is a Monday morning. What do we do then? It's a fact of life that in every joy on earth, there's a twinge of sadness. You know, one of those moments came for me when I was home for Easter one time during seminary, and we'd celebrated beautifully at my home parish, and then we celebrated at my family's house, and we had dinner, and then after dinner we decided, okay, usually we do something outside, and that day we played wiffle ball. And my dad is an excellent wiffle ball player, and I was having like the best game ever. you got the chair set up as the strike zone, you know, and then it was amazing. It was a moment of almost pure joy. But that's it, right? In ordinary, everyday language, even, it's there because it's temporary. It's not pure joy, it's temporary. So what do we do with that? And where are we today? Where does Jesus fit into this? We're near a well in Samaria, in a dry, weary land, longing for water and seeking a source of joy which will not evaporate as so often the things of the earth do. See, very often in the course of our life, though perhaps we know we're made for heaven, we find ourselves coming to the well of worldly pleasures as this woman does. Notice she comes in during midday. If you lived in that part of the world at that time, you did not go fetch water at midday without a really good reason. It would be like going out outside on a nice balmy August afternoon here in Texas. You don't want to do that. You want to get up early and go get your water. The noontime hour when the heat of life is bearing down, tired, when all other people are gone, we're tempted often to fill the water jar of our desire with the pleasure of the world, to try and slake our thirst, even though we know it will be just temporary, with a water that we know will leave us thirsty again, rather than turning to the Lord, who is the source of living water, longing for immediate satisfaction or relief from that longing, we compromise on our journey to joy. And we begin to very easily make idols, to take creatures and treat them as the creator. St. Augustine describes this experience like this. He says, "I threw myself, deformed as I was, upon those well-formed things which you made. You were with me, yet I was not with you. These things held me far from you, things which would not have existed were they not in you." Why do we do that, friends? Why are those idols so attractive to us? I think it's because we believe lies about who God is and who we are for Him. This goes all the way back to the garden, believing the ancient lie that God is not trustworthy. Our first parents fell. And so also we do that. We believe a lie about God, that He's not trustworthy, or that He will not be enough, or that He cannot be enough, or that He does not wish us to be happy. Because of that, we turn to the things around us as sources of our satisfaction of this desire, rather than letting the desire itself orient us to heaven. If we forget God or don't believe that He's good, or don't believe that He's our Father who wills our good, we will easily let our hearts be drawn down, forgetting the glory to which we're called. When we don't believe the words that Jesus promises today in the gospel, "Whoever drinks the water I will give will never thirst," we become easily ensnared by lust and greed and gluttony and sloth and wrath and vainglory and envy. And all of those things relate to making creatures into our God. And thank God that those idols don't satisfy. Thank God that our hearts can't rest there. As many times as we come to that well of worldly pleasure, we won't be satisfied. And thank God we are left wanting more. Our longing for more, our thirst, that painful even thirst or longing in your heart is a good thing. Though painful, the longing is like a compass. It points us somewhere and to someone who can actually satisfy our desire. The ache in all of our hearts makes us unsatisfied with every earthly good, and we thirst for more. Our longing will not be satisfied by anyone or anything other than Him. Everyone who drinks this water from the well of worldly pleasure, says the Lord, will be thirsty again. Whoever drinks the water that I shall give will never thirst. He has made us for himself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in him. And so our hope is, brothers and sisters, that even as we might debase ourselves by settling for stale water from idols that we have set up, still he thirsts for us to know and to love him. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that those who believe in him might have life. And this hope is sure, for Christ, while we were still yet helpless, died at the appointed time for the ungodly. He died for you and me when we couldn't do anything. Notice in the gospel today, who's at the well first? Jesus. Who speaks first? Jesus. Who acts first? Jesus. It's always him seeking us much more than us seeking him. He makes the first move. He does not wait for her to speak. He speaks first. He thirsts for her soul much more than she thirsts for water. And see how he untwists her desire. Step by step, he draws her to recognize that what she desires is him. He alone is the justice that she longs for. He alone will satisfy her heart. He gives her the living water of the Spirit to satisfy her thirst. Now, friends, he does the same for you and for me, or he will if we let him. No matter how we have come to believe that the wells of worldly pleasure will satisfy our deep longings for happiness, or what well we're drinking from, or for how long we've drunk from that well, remaining unsatisfied, we will always find that Christ is already there at that place, thirsting for us more than we thirst for him. God proves his love for us in this, that while we were still yet sinners, Christ died for us. Friends, from the cross, Jesus cries out, "I thirst." He thirsts for you. He thirsts that you might love him. And he wishes to show his love for you. He calls and he cries out. He bursts in upon our deafness. He shines and he glows and he drives away our blindness. He touches us and we are inflamed with desire for his peace. He desires to greet us and to show us how he alone can fulfill the longing of our hearts. The question is, will we let him? He thirsts only to provoke our thirst for him, in whom we will find our happiness. If today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts.